Welcome into episode 234 of the Sources Say Podcast, your go-to Kentucky basketball and recruiting podcast on the growing KSR Podcast Network. Sources Say is, as always, presented by our good friends at Justice Dental. Visit one of their two Lexington locations, that's on Blazer Parkway and Wellington Way, by scheduling an appointment online at justicedental.com or by calling 859-543-0700. You can even send a text message to one of their friendly team members at the same number to ask a question or make an appointment. Now is a great time to schedule your dental cleaning. Dr. Thompson, Dr. Justice, and their team strive to provide you with good oral health in a comfortable environment. The Justice Dental team looks forward to seeing you soon. I'm your host, Jack Pilgrim of Kentucky Sports Radio. Very happy to be joined once again by Sean Smith of Go Big Blue Country. Sean, how the heck are you?
I'm fantastic, and I apologize if it seems like my scenery has changed to a car for the last week or so, but I'm on the road scouting. We're a couple of wins from a state Final Four appearance, so I'm on the road hoping to get some good stuff tonight so we can play a game on Wednesday night with a chance to go to the Elite Eight in the state tournament.
Well, congrats on making it that far, and obviously best of luck as you hopefully close this thing out with yet another banner. I know you're building a little John Wooden dynasty over there at Livesey, so keep on keeping on with that. But in the midst of this scouting and all your winning success, unfortunately, Kentucky was unable to continue its winning ways with its four-game winning streak coming to an end with a 77-68 home loss against the Kansas Jayhawks, a game that, Sean, everything was building up to that moment. The Rupp Arena crowd, I have not seen anything like that since easily before, you know, COVID started. And, I mean, students there at 8 a.m., 6 a.m., something like that, 12 hours before the game started. Every single seat in the entire venue filled an hour before the game started. You had all the celebrities, all the big-time recruits. We got Reed Shepard and Rob Dillingham there at the opening TV timeout. You had the number one recruit in America there, Trey Johnson. I mean, you just felt like everything was building up to this high-profile, finally break. You know, we got this breakthrough against this. You know, we've talked about quad one wins. This felt like the premier win to finally kind of turn that corner as we kind of go down the home stretch of the season. And the Cats just couldn't get it done, Sean. They were in position. They kept clawing right back. It got down to one a couple times, two a couple times. Even, I mean, they were still right there in the thick of things with 2 minutes left in the game. But they just weren't able to make the big shots that Kansas was able to make, and it resulted in a nine-point home loss to end the winning streak. Sean, I know this was one we were very excited about. This is one we were optimistic about, but they were just unable to get the job done. Your initial thoughts on the loss?
To me, it might be the biggest wasted opportunity of all the ones that they've had, just because it was on their home court. They had been playing good basketball, obviously, in league play, and the win at Tennessee a few weeks ago, and then building a winning streak there in league play and a winning streak overall. So it feels like a big wasted opportunity given where it was in the season in late January, and really their last chance to get something in the out of conference. So this is going to be a team that goes into March with nothing to show for out of SEC play. So I think that's the other thing about this too. Like, if they still have opportunities to get quad one wins, and I know we'll get into that discussion here in a minute on the rundown, but that's the last one that they had out of conference to build something with a resume when it comes to the Kansas, the Gonzaga, the UCLAs, and they have nothing to show for there. And I think that's probably the biggest disappointing thing is when we looked at that schedule when the season started, we talked about all those opportunities out of league play to get quality wins, and now they have nothing to show for in that category.
Yeah, and I guess the frustrating the game in particular was that it just did feel so close because they did get the right guys that you wanted taking the shots. They were getting them, and they weren't making them. Obviously, C.J. Frederick goes 0-for-5 from three. Jacob Toppin 0-for-1. He's not the guy that you want taking the threes, but just going on the list of guys who weren't able to make shots. Antonio Reeves 0-for-3. Chris Livingston 0-for-1. Cason Wallace is the only guy that made a single three-pointer in the entire game. He goes 2-for-3 from deep. The team as a whole finishes 2-for-13, while you have, you know, Kansas's best players making the big shots at the end of the game. And it just kind of felt like the difference between a program that is right there on the cusp of, you know, even coming off a three-game losing streak like Kansas was, that felt like a team that had the pieces to, you know, hit the big shot in March. You know, that the pieces that they were ready for that moment. It just didn't feel like Kentucky was. It sucked because that's what C.J. Frederick was brought in to do, was to make those big shots. That's what Antonio Reeves was brought in to do, to make those big shots. And it just sucks that the moment was on the line. And I think there was a shot quality chart that came out that referenced just the level of shot attempts that Kentucky was taking. I think shot quality was the service that put it out. And Kentucky had a shot quality score 67.5 compared to 66.7 for Kansas, putting the win probability for the Cats at 53%, considering the type of shots that Kentucky was able to get. But they weren't able to make them while Kansas was able to, and it resulted in a 9-point loss.
Yeah, and I think Friday night when we recorded, I called this a must-win game for both teams because I thought Kansas was reeling with that losing streak that they had, and Kentucky was searching for something to add to its resume and to kind of keep them on track and build some momentum going into February. So Kansas is the team that ended up ultimately winning the battle there and adding to what they've done. And Kentucky is, to me, still firmly in a position where the next game up becomes the biggest game of the season. And we'll get into that and stuff as we move throughout the show too. But I feel like Kentucky's reached a point now entering February here. Well, obviously they have one more game, but before you get into the month of February, but when you get to that point, it feels like Kentucky's playing its biggest game of the season every single night, because when it comes to what they have on their resume, there's not a lot there. There is a bad loss to South Carolina, and you can't afford anything else that could be bad on Selection Sunday. They need a lot of good. So there's a lot of big basketball games coming up for Kentucky, regardless if there's a number or ranking beside the opponent or not. Like, these are all must-win games coming up.
Yeah, and you know, Bill Self kind of mentioned it after the game, said this was like their version of Tennessee, you know, Kentucky's version of Tennessee, when we kind of had no choice but to go down to Knoxville and win that game. Very similar situation. They were in the midst of, an eight-game stretch where seven of those games were against ranked opponents, several of them in the top 10. And it was weird that Kentucky was the easiest game on their during that stretch because of
Arena.
Any other year that would be easily the hardest by far, but it was just kind of the fact of the matter for them is that they kind of had their backs up against the wall and said, look, we have no choice but to go into Rupp Arena and win that game. And you do feel good because Kentucky had a chance late. And I guess my thought is, I don't feel any different about this team as I did when they were coming out of the Vanderbilt win, like just in terms of long-term, like what this team is, like I still feel like the offense is getting better. I feel like they're getting the shots that we're looking for that we weren't earlier in the year. I feel like the offense is running a lot more. It's just more cohesive and things are running more fluidly than they did before. So that leaves me a little bit, you know, not that the sky is falling and the ground is breaking underneath our feet, but it's still just concerning that we are approaching February and we're still having inconsistencies with the lineup. We're having inconsistencies with, you know, one night a guy's going to go 2 for 3, 4 for 5, you know, something exactly what you're looking for from deep. And then the next night they're going to go 0 for 5, 0 for 6, 0 for 7. And that's the stuff that leads to early tournament exits. And that is what concerns me. But I still think that this team's getting better. It just sucks that they don't have much to show for it as of right now. And now their backs are against the wall, just like Kansas was during their three-game losing streak. They have no choice but to go down to Oxford on Tuesday and win that game.
Yeah, and that's the thing. That's where I was coming from, that the biggest game on the schedule is the next game. And it's going to be that way to me for the rest of the year for Kentucky, given the situation that they put themselves in. Now, losing to Kansas doesn't – that's not going to take you off the bubble. That's not going to cause you to miss the NCAA tournament in itself. The loss to South Carolina is the one that it's going to stand out here in about a month. So I thought that Saturday was an opportunity to kind of erase that and wipe it out, because essentially the win at Tennessee is kind of a push now because you still have the South Carolina loss on your resume. So I was hoping that they could get the one against Kansas to kind of get them back into the quad one category and to kind of get a leg up and kind of get away from that loss to South Carolina. But Kentucky's going to have opportunities. They still got quad one games. They have a few at Rupp Arena. They have some on the road. but they better start stringing some together, or it could get very interesting here, because this is a resume that is still missing. Like, there's nothing there that's making that. When you look at Kentucky and you see that they're playing better basketball, I agree with you. The offense and things, it is improving. I don't feel like this is a team that's going to kind of spiral and go out of control because of this loss. I think they're going to get back to their winning ways and stuff this week. But it's just they haven't done enough to solidify anything yet to where you can't drop another one. You can't let one loss turn into two Tuesday night at Ole Miss. You have got to get back in the win column, get a road win, regroup, and then get on another win streak here. And they still have a winning streak in SEC play. That's still a thing. So they're playing well in the league. Keep that going. Keep winning league games. Keep climbing that ladder. And then just try to string something together here. That way, when you get into mid-February and you get some more of these quad one opportunities against Tennessee and Auburn, all these other teams and stuff coming up, you get to a certain point to where you can get a couple of wins there, then you can get yourself firmly in the NCAA tournament. Because to me, the key is right now is regardless of seeding, like, this isn't a Kentucky team where I worry about they need to be a 4, or they need to be a 6, or they need to be a 7 or 8. Honestly, Jack, I think this is a team where you just want to make the tournament and then be playing your best basketball.
Yeah, and there was so much, you know, talk individually about this game and how things unfolded and the wait to get to the basketball Benny lineup and maximizing versatility, how Chris Livingston was being used. That was a huge topic of conversation afterward, John Calipari being pretty outspoken that he got that one wrong, thinking that Chris needed to play more and incorporating him more at the 4. And we talked last episode about, you know, some of the identity crisis issues with this team and not knowing what each kid is and what they need to be to put this team in their best position. What did you think of just kind of how the lineups were used and, you know, getting things started? Chris gets hot, 8 quick points to open the game, really gets used the way he needs to be used. And what we've been kind of preaching from the beginning, I mean, part of it was at the 3, but another part was at the 4 as well. But really it was about getting him in open space, getting him to kind of get a full head of steam underneath him where he can have opportunities to drive to the basket and score around the rim and, you know, finish through physicality and toughness and things like that. That is kind of his bread and butter. That's what made him a 5-star McDonald's All-American. We finally got to see that breakthrough with him. And then he gets 1 minute in the second half. John Calipari pretty, adamant saying, I had to take him out because they were doubling Oscar. And, you know, they don't trust or, you know, believe that Chris Livingston's going to make a shot from 3. So they were leaving him wide open while Oscar was getting double teamed down low. And it really kind of threw a wrench into things there for us late. So he felt the need to kind of, you know, go smaller and take Chris out of the game. What did you think of just the lineups in general and the timing of how individual guys were used? I know Xavier Wheeler, again, polarizing player who, when he got inserted in, things kind of got south a little bit. I'm certainly not putting the blame on him for the loss, but again, it's just kind of one of those coincidence type deals where when he got put back in, that's where some of the issues kind of crept back in. Just your thoughts on what you saw from, you know, put on your coaching hat. What did you see from a coach's perspective?
I was really pleased in the first half with what they got out of Chris Livingston. Like, that was beautiful. The finish there early, the 2-foot finish, the pro hop into the lane in the basket was one of the strongest moves I think that we've seen from him in his short time at Kentucky so far. And I was a little disappointed that he didn't get any run there in the second half because, Jack, from what I'm seeing, I feel like for Kentucky to reach its ceiling when it comes to March, whether that be SEC tournament or what, I'm starting to think that Chris Livingston has to be a part of that. Like these two freshmen that I've been talking about, when it comes to potential, two of the guys on this roster that have the most potential of anyone is probably Cason Wallace and Chris Livingston, just given their age and their development process and how much they can add and stuff and how much they can improve. Jacob Toppin is who he is. Xavier Wheeler is who he is. Even Oscar Tshiebwe is who he is. The two dudes on the roster that aren't, that play minutes, would be the two freshmen. And I feel like that Kentucky finding a way to get Chris more involved and play more minutes has to be a good thing for their success and what they're doing late in the season. I think just getting him on the floor, and I know I grouped them together position-wise the other day. I said him and Jacob, instead of getting, when it comes to roles, each individual person, grouping them together. And I thought the difference in the game early was Chris and Jacob making shots and making high energy plays and being aggressive, and Kentucky's pace that they were playing with, Jack, in the first 10 to 12 minutes of the game was one of the best paces they had had all season. And then I felt like they kind of gone away from that. And then we didn't get to see much of the lineup and stuff that everybody wants to see. And I just feel like that Kansas took advantage of a lot of Kentucky's weaknesses. They killed Kentucky in pick and roll, specifically Oscar Tshiebwe in pick and roll. It was side ball screen. It was middle ball screen. I thought it was a game where not only did Kansas have the better game plan, but they also hit the shots, too, to make the difference late in the game. I would have liked to have seen Cal done some different things lineup-wise. I would have loved to have seen, like, Chris in there more in the second half. And you need your energy, guys. And I think finding a way to get Chris involved more and make his role bigger is going to be one of the differences in whether this team kind of peaks at the right time or whether it doesn't. I just think that those two freshmen have the most upside of anyone on the roster, and you got to find a way, even if you have to force it, whether it be the three or the four, just get him on the floor.
Yeah, another opportunity, another, I guess, time that Jacob Toppin finishes with a team high in field goal attempts, which I just do not think is a recipe for success for this team. He goes 14 points, 6 of 11 shooting, 2 for 4 from the free throw line, 4 rebounds, 2 assists. Big issue with him was that he just wasn't rebounding to start the game, and that was a serious issue. I mean, overall, Kentucky getting out-rebounded in this game was just unacceptable. This is a team that was known for being soft inside and not having that physicality inside and definitely not the depth. And this was seen as a game that Oscar Tshiebwe had to have video game numbers. Like, this was one of those games that there was not a matchup for him, at least one-on-one for you know, Kansas to shut him down. And you know, as crazy as it sounds, an 18.9 rebound, 4 assist game for Oscar Tshiebwe, it just wasn't enough. And it's stupid that we even have to get to that point where an 18-9 game is kind of like a letdown for what this team needs right now. And it's just a testament to show that the other guys just aren't stepping up when they're necessary. And it just kind of goes back to this team's message, Cal's message. Chin Coleman had a pretty strong quote last week about it, saying that we don't need we don't need any individual player to be great. We just need everybody to do their job and be good. And if everybody is good, then we can be a special team. I mean, they continue to use the term special, that this still is a special roster with national title dreams. And, you know, they think it's realistic on their end, but you can't have, you know, 18-9 from Oscar and, you know, even Jacob at 14-4, he was solid offensively and made, you know, solid shots. I like the way he was attacking early and, you know, finishing around the basket, but he wasn't enough on the glass, and he was pretty hard on himself. I asked him, you know, about his rebounding after the game. He said, I just wasn't good enough in that area. That's why Cal put Chris in so much to start the game and then went away from him late. And, you know, because I was rebounding a little bit better, but that was a point of emphasis with Cal, saying Chris needed to be in there because he would have fought on the glass. And, you know, CJ Frederick, 2 points, 1 of 8 shooting. That's just not going to get the job done. Xavier Wheeler, 2 points, 1 of 2 shooting. Not going to get the job done. You know, it just, you need more. Cason Wallace did enough. You'd argue that Oscar Tshiebwe did enough on paper, but, you know, even still, 6 of those 18 points came at the free throw line. He was getting hacked. And, you know, when you're getting doubled and triple teamed down there, they were trapping him. Basically on every single touch, you got to figure out ways to get the ball to your shooters, and they got to be able to make shots. It's just a really significant letdown performance, Sean, that it was a perfect example of not everybody doing their part to kind of be all in on a victory.
Yeah, and when it comes to talking about roles and doing your job, that's a good thing. If everybody's doing their job, and it may be a small single job, like CJ Fredericks is to make shots and Antonio Reeves is to make shots. Oscar's is to rebound and be a force down low. Then you got Cason Wallace, who's emerging into Kentucky's most talented, best player, superstar, whatever you want to call him. The one thing that concerns me about this team is if they do put it together and it comes down to, and they're in that NCAA tournament, what's the one thing, Jack, that it's the common denominator between Final Four teams, national championship teams, these teams that actually are a threat to win a championship? When you get into tournament play, guard play carries you. Like, yep, we see it all the time. Like, the teams that have the best guard play, they end up in the Final Four playing for a national championship. You go back to last year's Final Four and the things that those teams were doing and those teams, and obviously the upsets and things you see in the NCAA tournament from some of the underdogs and Cinderella stories, it's because they got really good guards that can make shots and do things and break you down. right now, when it comes to Kentucky's backcourt, I question anything outside of Cason Wallace. I think Cason's going to end up being that guy by the end of the year, that consistent piece that's going to be a star. The other guys, I feel like at times, have too many moments where they don't show up, especially in big games. They'll, you know, CJ has had his moments, but he's also had his moments where he can't hit shots in some of the biggest games. Antonio's obviously had his moments as well. We know Xavier struggles. I think I'm worried more about the backcourt figuring it out together when it comes to tournament time than I am anything else about the roster.
Yeah, and just lineups, I'm just concerned. What do you do? You know, why go away from Cason Wallace when he is finding the success that he is at the beginning of the game? And you know, putting Xavier in, and when you put him in and Antonio Reeves and CJ Frederick aren't making shots, even the basketball Benny lineup, that's not working. And then you try to incorporate Chris Livingston and figure out where he's going to be. Do you put him at the three? Do you put him at the four? And it got to the point where we were seeing lineups with Xavier, Lance Ware, and there was a maybe Chris Livingston. I know there was an awkward three-man group there I just was left scratching my head there at the end of the first half thinking, like, why did we even get to this point? We went away from what was working. That first 10-minute stretch, it just felt like they were fighting. Everything was exactly trending the direction that we were waiting for, and it just felt like the wheels fell off, and they were never able to recover. The fight was there. Just on the surface level, but man, it just when it came time to hit the dagger shots, when it came time to respond, you know, get a big defensive stop. The defensive stops just weren't there. They got absolutely cooked in the pick and roll once again. And at what point, Sean, is that something that needs to get seriously addressed? And how do you address that? And I'm genuinely curious your thoughts on that as well, because it just felt like every chance there was to either hit the big shot on the offensive end or get the big stop on the defensive end. The team was just not willing to show up when Kansas was. And again, it just feels like the difference between a good team and a great team.
Yeah, and the thing with what Kansas did, Kansas and Bill Self's one of the best in the game. Like, Bill Self makes adjustments at the right times. He's one of the best in the game at throwing – I mean, how many times have we watched Bill Self coach teams throw a triangle into at the under-8 media timeout in the second half that just throws a team out of rhythm? It's happened to Kentucky. It's happened to North Carolina. It's happened to the best of the best when it comes to coaches. But I thought that the way that they scheme things and stuff there in the first half and the second half, they'd go some of those empty side ball screens, and it would just put Kentucky in a pinch where guys weren't there on the tag. And then one time it was Xavier Wheeler coming over to tag, and he's not going to make a play there and end up being an animal. And he's too small to tag on a big running to the rim. I don't know if I would love to see, and he's not going to do it. I would love to see Cal mix some zone in here and there just to kind of change the flow. He's not going to do it though. But even if it's just for maybe three straight trips, just to change it up and just make something, whether maybe you start blitzing some of these ball screens. I don't know, like just anything, just change up your ball screen coverage. I know Kentucky plays a lot of drop coverage. They do some different things, but anything to mix up how you play, that way you're not so predictable in what you're doing. I thought Kansas had their way with whatever they wanted to do offensively, especially when it came to putting Oscar Tshiebwe in those ball screens. Now, that's something that has shown up on film. They've played over the top of Oscar. They've attacked Oscar. Anytime you can get Oscar involved in a ball screen, and that's going to be something that I think you're going to see, especially some of these other teams in the league go to. How many screens per trip can you get Oscar involved in ball screen coverage? If you can get to two, you're probably feeling pretty good about getting a good shot. That has to improve, because I don't care if he's giving you 19 and 12. If you can't defend, what's the 19 and 12 good for?
Yeah, you're giving up 19 and what, one offensive – how many offensive rebounds did he have? I mean
– And that's where I would love to see him, just even if it's just 10 possessions of zone a game, just throw something out there out of a timeout, out of a media timeout, out of a dead ball situation, just mix it up and do something. I mean, he's the one that's getting paid $9 million to do his job there. But I'm just saying, if you're having some trouble, just throw something different. And if they bury a three on you, so what? They're killing you in pick and roll. Like, you're not getting any stops there. Like, this is a team that, they've got to figure those things out. They've got to go to the film. But that's going to continue to be something that teams are going to go to. They're not going to go and just spread you out and drive you. They're going to put Kentucky in pick and roll situations. And it's not like Kentucky's not communicating and talking on that stuff. I just think that that's just necessarily an area where some of these bigs and stuff struggle, especially Oscar. He struggled with that, not just this year. He struggled with that last year too.
Mm-hmm. A common theme in the comment section, something I thought about while the game was going on, you had Adu Thiro go into Knoxville, go into Thompson Bowling Arena and fight his absolute butt off down there, and was a key contributor in that win. And we don't see him since then. And with so many guard issues, and, you know, like in this game in particular, Kentucky's not getting a shot to fall. And, you know, Wheeler is okay, but not, you know, not terrible, but not great, not a massive contributor in that game. I just go back to that game in Knoxville, and it's like, Adu has proven time and time again that he can contribute on this team, that he is a guy that, again, he's going to give it 110% every single time he steps on the floor. He's going to make mistakes, and he's going to make mistakes at full speed. But the good almost always outweighs the bad when he's on the floor. And we saw that, you know, a prime example of that at Tennessee. And in a game like this one in particular, it's just like, how do you not at least say, all right, here's 5 minutes. Show me. Just show me. You're outspoken. If you follow his dad on Twitter, they're absolutely outspoken about needing more minutes and being frustrated about not getting enough playing time. So, I mean, it's not just hearing things from behind the scenes. It's very certain, like very readily available for you to know that there's frustration there. But I just don't know how you don't see a kid that's just itching for that possibility, itching for that opportunity, saying, I need it. Like, let's go make this happen. And then not willing to give him that chance. It's just like, man, a lot of comments about why is Adu not in the game. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I'll tell you this. Majority of the time that we have seen him in the appearances that he's made, he performed. Going all the way back to the Bahamas, going to the Blue-White game, to some of those early season moments, and then especially at Tennessee, that's a guy that when his number's been called upon and some of the most crucial moments, he's performed. And, I mean, he's knocked down a couple of shots there at times. He's a big body guard. He can defend. He can grab some rebounds. He'll make some plays for you. I think that you got to give him a look. Like, it's not like this is an undefeated Kentucky team or a team that's sitting in the top 10 right now and everything's going their way. Like, try something different. I mean, Cal has obviously – saw the light and changed things with the way that he plays Xavier Wheeler. So why not go elsewhere and try something with Adu? Because right now Kentucky just needs a spark. It needs another option, somebody that's capable of doing some things. And why not? I mean, when he played that well on the road in Knoxville, and remember I made this comment that day that I was curious to see, or it was right after that, I was curious to see what the rotation would look like, because that day Cal had no choice but to play some of those guys because there was no Wheeler. And, you know, guys were out and not available to play a lot of minutes, so they had to go to Adu. But then now that everybody's kind of back and you've got options and everybody's healthy, you don't seem. That's what I'm saying. Like, you Cal's got to have the confidence to play some of these guys and give them some opportunities, not just when he's in a pinch and has to go to them. Because he delivered that day in Knoxville. He didn't blow up the stat sheet, but he also didn't blow up things with what you were trying to do in game plan wise. He was solid, played a lot of minutes, was stable, and he got the job done in the toughest environment that Kentucky has played in this year. Like, that Tennessee is a legit Final Four contender.
I guess the concern is this team is going to come down to whether they make shots or not. And it's just a scary position because I don't trust the in-game adjustments to make up for those deficiencies. I don't trust that call to go, all right, well, this isn't working. We got to go with Adu. We got to, you know, we got to get Ugo to come in and get a stop or two. Like, we need Lance Ware to provide the physicality and stuff. And you know, you do got to have to give credit to, you know, Cal for seeing the mindset of, okay, well, they're double teaming Oscar every time, you know, Chris Livingston's in the game, they're willing to give him that shot. So therefore we need to make that change. Like, that's technically on an adjustment, but Sean, you, from a coach's perspective, how do you not see that and say, okay, well, Chris Livingston is at his best when, you know, he is an attacker, when he is able to finish in traffic and through contact. How do you see a guy that's not guarded at the three-point line where he has a clear driving lane to the basket and not use that as an opportunity to take advantage of, not as one that you have to go away from? I guess that was kind of my concern watching it unfold, is that he made the adjustment, but I just don't think it was the right adjustment.
Well, and you've mentioned a moment ago that it comes down to Kentucky's guys hitting shots, and that's what the season's going to come down to, is whether or not C.J. Frederick makes threes and Antonio Reeves hits shots. Like that, I think 110%, I believe that Kentucky will live and die by that. So when it comes to the basketball beating lineup and the lineup everybody likes, I think that we're going to get to a point to where that's going to have to be the lineup that plays. Is you're going to have Kaysen at the one with those two shooters, and then whoever's playing the four, whether it's Jacob or whether you go with Chris, and then Oscar. I think that that's going to have to be the lineup when Kentucky gets into its most crucial and critical moments of the season, whether that be in a game tomorrow in Oxford, or whether that's a game a month from now in the SEC tournament, or if they make it to the NCAA tournament and they're fighting for their lives on the first weekend. Like, I think that's what it's going to come down to, is having to play those guys and whether those two make shots or not. And they're going to have to make shots. Another thing that could help, though, when it comes to Chris and the way that, you know, the scheme and the way teams are doubling Oscar, if Kentucky's defense can improve and they can get stops, then those stops lead to transition opportunities where I think Chris is at his best, is downhill and pushing the pace. And you saw that early in the game, Kaysen getting the ball out of his hands early and these other guards getting the ball out of their hands early. Kentucky's got to be a tempo team that I think pushes the tempo and pushes the pace. Like, this isn't a team that I think is going to be able to grind you out offensively and win a lot of games, because I think outside of Kaysen, they don't have the guard play that can kind of co-create their own and get some of those shots. They need those two shooters to knock down shots. They need Kaysen to be a star, and they need Oscar to do his thing. Like, I just think that this team needs to get as many easy baskets as it can and somehow mold itself into one of the better defensive teams in the SEC in college basketball before it's too late. Now, is that a possibility? I don't know. But that feels like the recipe for this team to succeed, is to get easy baskets off Oscar Tshiebwe's offensive rebounds, running the floor, knocking down shots with those two shooters. This season will sink or swim on C.J. Frederick and Antonio Reeves making shots. That's the reason you brought them in, right? That's the reason they're on their roster. There's not a Shaedon Sharpe that was supposed to be on this roster initially that can kind of go get his own. I'm sorry to bring up bad topics and things.
Well, it's funny that there's actually a comment from Andrew Lachine says, if only we had Shaedon Sharpe.
Bingo. Yeah. And then it's problem solved, because then what you got is you got Kaysen and Shaedon. But they don't have Shaedon. They have two guys that are shooters. And if they make shots, Kentucky's going to have a chance to beat anyone. If they don't, Kentucky can lose to anyone. And that's just part of it. Like, that's where Kentucky stands. The margin for error to me is it's razor thin with this team. It is. And this is a team that, when it's all going right, I think can beat anyone in college basketball. I truly believe that. Even though we haven't seen it play out, they've had their opportunities. They just didn't make the shots to do it. But if they don't make shots, they could lose to anyone too. That's not the game you want to be playing when you line up and play on Tuesdays and Saturdays, and especially on Thursday, Saturday, or Friday, Sunday here in about 6 weeks.
Yeah. Devin Anderson says, serious question, why do we need to work on pick and roll defense 2 days away from February? It just does feel like that. It's a scary thing to think about it. And I think you hit the nail on the head to just know that this entire season comes down to if they just decide to make shots on any given night. Like, this season will come down to if C.J. Frederick can get hot, or if Antonio Reeves goes nuclear, 23 points in a game, or whatever.
Any beat writer covered any team in college basketball could probably make that same comment about their team. But I don't think Kentucky can beat good teams if those two don't make shots. In the past, Kentucky's had guys, if they didn't shoot the ball well, they could still grind out games. They could post you up. They could make some plays. They had a point guard that was dynamic and do some stuff. This team's I just feel like the margin for error is super thin, Jack, to where if everything's going right, then we're all smiling and having a good time. But if one of those things goes wrong, Kentucky could still lose a game. If both of them aren't knocking down shots, Kentucky's in serious trouble. Casey Wallace can't be the only guy hitting a three.
And the only caveat to that is if Oscar Tshiebwe goes for 37 and 24, which, again, you it's so stupid that we even have to have that mindset of, well, at least you got a superhero down low that can, go put up video game numbers on any given night. It's like, yeah, it's a great luxury to have, and it's an unbelievable crutch that a lot of teams would just absolutely die to have. But it sucks that other players can get so cold and be such a non-factor on this team that even an 18 and 9 night for Oscar Tshiebwe isn't enough. It's a really scary position to be in when we are a month. And Cal said that after the game. It's a marathon. It's not a sprint. We have plenty of time. Well, do you? Like, I mean, we're 1 month away from March Madness. Like, do we really have a lot of time? Because
you don't want to get into that SEC tournament having to win three games. You don't. Yeah. Not this year. And this is a team that you want to be off the bubble going into Nashville. And let's face it, they're not off. They're still in danger zone. Like I thought,
Yeah, his latest update had Kentucky as one of the last four teams in, which
The danger of that.
How often are we there in that circumstance?
Well, you know the danger of that. You have bid stealers.
Yeah.
You have these teams that win these win conferences and then they steal a bid. Or something like that. Like, you don't want to be on that graphic at the end of the year where you're the last four in. Obviously, you're more comfortable being one of the projected four one seeds, but you do not want to be on that graphic where you're last four in or first four out, because you're flirting with disaster, because that bubble shrinks, right? Like, that last four in might become last three in when it comes to a team still in a bid. So you want to be off that, and that's where I'm coming from, that just do enough to get in. Do enough to leave no doubt on Selection Sunday that when you're sitting there on the couch or where they're in Nashville celebrating an SEC championship, it doesn't matter that hey, like if you win an SEC championship, you obviously don't have to worry about it. But let's say that they make it to semifinal Saturday and lose or something like that. You want to know, like, okay, cool, we're probably somewhere in the ballpark of a 7-10 seed. We're in. That's fine. Like, this just feels like a year where you just get in and play. Like, I think when you look around college basketball, like, there's not those crazy teams that are just unbeatable. Like, I think Kentucky can line up and beat anyone that they play if all those things that we talk about are going well. But also feel like this is a team that can line up and play a 14 seed or a 13 seed or a 15 seed and possibly lose. Like, that's just the reality of what we're dealing with here. I don't think it's a terrible Kentucky basketball team. I just don't think it's a great Kentucky basketball team either.
Looking ahead a little bit, Kentucky heads to Oxford tomorrow to take on Ole Miss. That is a quad two opportunity for the Cats, and then follow that up with another quad two against Florida at home on Saturday, then a quad one against Arkansas the following Tuesday, a quad two on the road at Georgia the following Saturday, then a quad one at home against Mississippi State, quad one or on the road at Mississippi State, quad one at home against Tennessee, quad one on the road at Florida, and then you get a quad two against Auburn, quad three at versus Vanderbilt, and then quad one to end the regular season at Arkansas. So still technically five more quad one opportunities on the schedule. But
how many of those are on the road? Three or two?
Two of them. Three of them are on the road.
And then you have Tennessee coming into Rupp Arena, who's going to want revenge, right?
That's a scary position to be in.
It is. Like, that's what I'm getting at. Like, so out of those five games, it feels like a Kentucky team that – now, this is the catch. You got to win all your quad twos, quad threes. You can't lose any of those. And then I think if they win three of those, they're probably in. If you lose one of those quad twos or whatever's coming up, and then you only win two of those quad ones, then you're probably having to do some work in the SEC tournament. Like, Kentucky needs to play perfect basketball outside of the quad one and then find a way to win probably three of those quad one games. And I think then you're safely in.
Dangerous position. Let's go on and answer some of these questions from the fans. If you have any questions, be sure to leave them in the comments section. It's been a blast the last couple shows. You guys have just been going crazy with the number of questions and comments and concerns that you guys have had. So keep that up. John P. Ryan asks, do you feel that UK has not done a good job in talent evaluation in the portal? Feels like Cal needs to go after more talented kids the way he has in the 23 class. What do you think of that? What do you think of the evaluation in that aspect?
Well, honestly, like I think it's hard to evaluate right now because the only portal piece that was added to this roster was Antonio Reeves. Like the other portal pieces were added when they had to go to the portal after the COVID year with Sabir and CJ and all those pieces. So I think that they've done an okay job evaluating that talent because we have to keep in mind that at one point the nucleus of this roster was good enough to get Kentucky a 2 seed and to be ranked in the top 10 at one point last year and one of the favorites to make it to a Final Four when the NCAA tournament started a year ago. I do think that getting back to getting the best of the best in the high school route, which is what they have coming in, is what you want the blueprint to be. And then you go add to your roster from the portal what you need. I would evaluate it and say that they've done an okay job. I mean, they have the reigning National Player of the Year, who was a transfer piece. But it feels like some guys like CJ had a lot more success at Iowa than he's had in Lexington. Is that because of injury? Is that because of the way he's being used? Is that because he's being pigeonholed into just being a spot-up shooter? I don't know. Like, Kansas did an excellent job covering him, by the way, I thought. Mm-hmm. And he did – I mean, he did miss some shots and stuff. But I would say I'm okay with what they've done from the portal. I don't think you're going to see Cal or Kentucky become a – program that's lenient on the portal moving forward. I just don't think that that's going to be the blueprint that they want. I think this has just been a transition period for that lasted more than 1 year. And I think they're going to break that streak here going into next year where they maybe add one or two guys from the portal every offseason, but I don't think you're ever going to see it to the point where they add five. I mean, that after the COVID year, they had to add a lot of guys. We expected when that happened that a lot of these guys would do what, Jack? Be back. Mm-hmm. And be multi-year guys at Kentucky. I don't think that they've necessarily failed in what they went after in the portal, but like you got to know that when you go get someone, and this is no knock, when you go get a guy from Illinois State, Antonio Reese played Illinois State for a reason for 3 years. When you go, I mean, Jacob Toppin was at Rhode Island for a reason. I mean, it's not like you're pulling, you know, Armando Bacot from North Carolina, or you're pulling one of the elite of the elites from a blue blood program. Like the Sabir was the point guard at Georgia. Like, they're good players. They're not – I just don't see NBA-level talents when you're coming from the portal. And I think Cal has been a guy that's leaned on NBA-level talent throughout his career, and that's not a bad thing. He's had a lot of success with it.
Yeah, that's what John P. Ryan says. I feel like UK has too many players from losing programs, Wheeler, Reeves, Toppin. And I think Reeves is a little bit different just in terms of – you know, he was a superstar at the previous stop. And if you adjust your expectations from there, I don't think he was ever meant to be a 20 point per game scorer the way he was there. I think that he was brought in to be like, well, if he's a 20 point per game scorer at Illinois State, if he could give you 12 here, you know, go give you a quick 10. If he could have been the Davion Mintz of this year's team in terms of just this, you know, quick scoring production like that, I think that would have been fine. But I do understand, you know, the Jacob Toppin and Sabir Wheeler. Toppin was a guy that you wanted to be the long-term project, you know, development piece. And, you know, and he has developed quite a bit, but yeah. I think that we were waiting for the explosion. And I think part of that is how he's being used and, you know, not putting him in positions to succeed as much. And, you know, the confidence.
We saw his brother become an NBA draft pick too. And I think we'd all be kidding ourselves if we didn't see Obi and see Jacob. Yeah. Like, we all thought it was going to be the same, right? Like, I did. Like, I thought Jacob would play his way into possibly being a late first-round draft pick or his athleticism and stuff like that. And don't get me wrong, I think Jacob does a lot of good things when he's playing well. And he looked good out of the gate the other night. Like, he was aggressive. He was getting to the rim. He made some nice moves. He's quick and explosive off the floor. But I don't necessarily disagree when it comes to you're getting guys from losing programs. I just don't think that the talent level that we've been used to at Kentucky over the course of Cal's tenure, I don't think it's even close to where it was at one point. That's changing, though. Like, we know, like, and you have to recruit what you can recruit. Like, we know that next year's class coming in is not one of the strongest classes in out of high school basketball. We know that. But they did get the best of the best in that class. So everybody else is taking and getting from the same pool of players. It's not like that Duke is getting, or UCLA or somebody's getting someone out of that class and they're like, oh, they're better just because they're going to UCLA. No, like, you're recruiting from the same pool of players. So you want to get the best of the best. Kentucky's doing it. And I think that's going to be the approach moving forward, is getting back to that. I just don't think that the level of talent at Kentucky's been what it should be for the last couple of years. Now, when they went through the season they had 9-16 a few years ago, it had to be built through the portal, Jack. We talked about that. There was no options in the high school round for what they want to do. They got Ty Washington late in that period. That was a blessing, because if they hadn't had that, I don't know where they would have went a year ago. So
it would have been bad.
That, and it would have been. And it was the midnight hour, right, to get him. And they got him late after
I think the path to success is you need the idea of the portal is to add a Nate Sestina or a Reed Travis.
Bingo.
A guy who you want to come in and be, again, the what Antonio Reeves, I think, was supposed to be.
Fits what you need.
The complimentary piece that, you know, even Davion Mintz, when he came in year one and he was supposed to be a star, well, that's different. But when he comes back and he's that spark plug energy guy, it's like, okay, well, now you're cooking. That at least adds up. This team, it's a core of those group of people who Cal has not proven that, like, that's what – you know, he's better with NBA talent than he is with talent like this, and having that be the bulk of your team, that's the recipe for disaster. It should have been switched. Instead of six portal guys and two blue chip recruits, it should have been four or five blue chip recruits and two portal guys. And I think that's where this team was set back.
And people probably thought we were beyond this topic, and I'm probably going to make some people mad, and I might get a comment or two here popping up, but when it happened last spring and Shaedon Sharpe declared for the draft and he left, you and I got on this show and we said, what? You're not going to replace Shaedon Sharpe in the portal, and there's no option in the high school route to replace him.
Yep.
If he were on this team right now, I do think we'd be having a different discussion about where Kentucky is.
Because he's a dog. He is an NBA talent that Cal – I vividly remember watching Cal watch him at Peach Jam and having Cal basically drooling on himself watching Shaedon play, because he is, as you're watching him in the NBA right now, damn good. Like a really, really good three-level scorer, that he's the go-getter. God, just imagining him next to Cason Wallace, you know, that complimentary, like, yeah, I'm a defensive-minded guy, but I'm going to go get mine too. And then Shaedon being the offensive three-level scorer. I can hit a shot from 30 feet if I need to, but I can go dunk on your head as well because I have a 40-inch vertical. Like, that is what this team needed, and that's what sucks.
Yep, and I know there's people listening to this right now that are probably wanting to turn it off because we're talking about Shaedon. But you weren't going to escape the impact of him leaving. I think even you and I kind of for a moment bought in that this team would somehow dodge it and would have enough, given that, well, because what did we say? After that happened, we're like, well, Oscar's coming back. That's a huge step in the right direction for your program. And you get your Cousy Award finalist back in Xavier Wheeler, who's kind of, you know, honestly, is, I don't want to say gone in reverse, but the role has been changed this year because Kentucky, obviously, the dynamic and things of not making shots. Like Kellen Grady for 90% of the season last year made threes. Davion Mintz hit threes. Kentucky's not been a consistent three-point shooting team this season, so it's forced Wheeler into a little bit of a different role because it's harder to play a guy like that. Oscar, obviously, we said it was hard to live up to what he did a year ago, being the National Player of the Year. Like, I just feel like that Kentucky's kind of had a lot of things not going its favor. And I think that you're seeing, especially on the perimeter, that's what I was getting at earlier when it comes to guard play. If this team had a guy like Shaedon Sharpe to go alongside Cason Wallace, then I would put them up in the NCAA tournament to beat anyone. But they don't have that. They have Cason and guys that they have to have make shots. Now, could CJ and Antonio Reeves get on a hot streak and shoot lights out in March? It's six games, Jack. Anything can happen. Mm-hmm. But that's asking a lot when we haven't seen it consistently done for a stretch. So what I'm looking for here, you're getting into the last month of the year, not a ton of games left to play. We're talking about an SEC winning streak here that's still active. That was an out-of-conference loss. You want to see at some point Kentucky play really, really good basketball for about four or five, six games in a row. And if they can do that against quality opponents, then it gives you hope that if they make it and they get into that tournament, that they can do it for a stretch. You just got to be playing really good basketball for six in a row.
And but if the margin
for error is thin.
If you're looking for signs of optimism and reasons to go, well, this team still has a realistic shot, it's the fact that it's not a structural issue with this team that, you know, Ty hurting his ankle or Kellen Grady getting, you know, his plantar fasciitis close out the year, Sabre Wheeler with his whiplash issues and those, you know, the structural issues that really just tanked last year's team. This one is they're getting open shots and the offense is running fluidly. It's just about having can a 47% career three-point shooter figure out a way to knock down shots. And again, he has a splint on the back of his shooting hand on his middle finger, really kind of crushing every, you know, the touch isn't there for him. He's really having trouble right now catching passes, which is kind of, you know, messing up his shot mechanics to get into his shot motion. And when he finally gets into the shot motion, the touch isn't there. So that is an issue right now that he's, you know, very close to being, I think, where I don't know if maybe even against Ole Miss that splint will be gone, but it's on the home stretch of being gone regardless. That's a positive. And at minimum, you have Antonio Reeves, who has the ultimate green light. In his head, he is not a nervous shooter. He's at least a guy who is confident as hell to go get his own shot. And we saw him hit several from the mid-range. He's kind of become that Emmanuel quickly, at least from the, you know, the floater aspect and things like that. If you're looking for a positive, I'd rather have to rely on a career 47% three-point shooter figuring out a way to make open shots by the end of the season more so than recovering from, you know, a kid having a high ankle sprain or, you know, something like that. That's something I'm at least holding on to, that I agree. The shots have to start falling at some point, but there is at least a little bit of a sample size for that to happen to close out the year.
There is, and I think that this is a team when it comes to shooting a three. This is where I group these guys into the same spot, like Jacob and Chris. And I grouped C.J. Frederick and Antonio Reeves into the same role. To me, it needs to be a combined. Those two got to combine to make five or six threes a game every single night. Mm-hmm. With the number of minutes that they play, you have to get five or six threes a game from those two collectively. Let Cason throw in one or two, and then this is a team that's averaging eight, nine makes a game from three. And then I think that some of that margin for error, you get a little bit more. You just got to get some type of consistency. You can't have CJ go 0-4. You can't have Antonio go 0-4. You got to have guys that can consistently make shots. They don't have to shoot 45% from three combined. They just got to make a few. If you remember in Knoxville, they made a few.
They sure did. Let's start wrapping this thing up. A couple of the questions from the feed. I'll go rapid fire with them and we'll get out of here. Lucas Ray, do you like the idea of a lineup of Oscar, Livingston, Reeves, Frederick, Wallace? Absolutely. I think that is the winning formula, and I think that's going to be the one moving forward. John P. Ryan, latest on player decisions. I think it is too early for that, but I do think we will see Xavier out. I think Antonio is a 50-50 right now. I think UK wants him back, and they're going to recruit him back, so that'll be a big one. I think Toppin and Livingston will likely be gone. I think Cason's gone. I think Oscar is probably closer to a 50-50 right now, but I still think when push comes to shove, he'll end up going pro. At some point your pro clock starts ticking louder and louder, and, you know, it's time to take a step forward. And, you know, with Ugo coming back and Aaron Bradshaw coming in at the five next year. I think that that's pretty clear turnover coming from there. But I think as of right now, I still don't know what's going to happen with Lance. That's going to be an interesting one. He may be a guy that randomly decides he wants to get some shots and actual minutes at a smaller school next year. I don't know about that, but feeling pretty confident about the rest of those guys. But I do think that we'll see as the year kind of progresses, inching closer to the finish line, we'll see, get a little bit more clarity on that. Let's talk Kentucky Sports says, can you talk about the recruitment of Trey Johnson, Tahad Pettiford, Boogie Flan, Travis Perry, Carter Knox, and Flory Badunga, and your prediction on who will get in that class? Can't go super in-depth on all of them, but Trey Johnson visit went in a couple other visits about questions about Trey Johnson's visit. That went very well. Kentucky likes where it stands there. Baylor, I think everybody is pretty convinced that they are the strongest opponent matchup for Kentucky in that one. Texas is looming. It just really depends on what happens with their head coaching battle. That's something that Trey's camp is, you know, really looking closely at. Trey is number one on Texas's recruiting board, and they're going to get desperate, and that could play an impact on things. But depending on what they do with the head coaching position, could change things. But I do think as of right now, it's a Kentucky Baylor battle with, I think, the pro route slipping just a little bit. Tahad Pettiford will not be at Kentucky. He will not be committing to Kentucky, so don't need to talk about that one. Boogie Flan, Kentucky likes him a lot. I think that they're going to kind of put him in that upper tier with Trey Johnson of who they're prioritizing. Definitely a name to keep a close eye on with him in particular. Travis Perry, I don't see him ending up at Kentucky. I think he likes Kentucky. They are lukewarm on him, but I just don't. I think he'll go somewhere where he'll get more playing time early. Carter Knox, I think it's a toss-up right now. I think Kentucky could get him if they made a big push, but I think they're waiting to see what his development is. Flory Badunga, UK thinks they have a shot. I've heard otherwise nationally that's going to be a Cincinnati decision, that he's going to go play with his former coach and where he has the connection from the Indiana elite side of things at Cincinnati. So I think that there's a shot there. Kentucky thinks they have a shot, but I think that one's definitely a bit more unlikely. I think that might have covered all of the other questions that I'm seeing. So with that, I think that we can probably get out of here. Well, before we do that, I have a quick message from our friends at MyBookie. You asked for it and they listen. MyBookie designed a unique deposit bonus that lets you cash in and cash out quick. This is a unique deposit bonus for sports bettors who want to focus on what to bet and not pay a payout sweat. Make your first deposit today with promo code SourcesSay. Wager your deposit amount once and you are eligible to cash out. If you want a sports book that gives you the most for your money, bet on the big game with MyBookie. Pre-game, live lines, and Super Bowl props. We have the Super Bowl coming up. Bet everything from the opening coin toss to the length of the national anthem to the color of the Gatorade dumped on the winning coach. I can't tell you exactly who's going to win the Super Bowl, but I can tell you where I am placing my bet, and that is at MyBookie. Bet anything, anytime, anywhere with MyBookie. Sean Smith, appreciate you joining us. As always, great stuff. Appreciate all the fan engagement and feedback. Great stuff from there. Where can fans find your work?
You can find my work at GoBigBlueCountry.com, and you can follow me on Twitter at GBBCountry. And I need everybody to be Livesey fans the next couple of days.
Go Livesey. Get the job done. We'll get back to a normal Sources Say schedule as a result of that, yes, as well. So I know fans are going to be excited for that. And I know they're going to be rooting hard for you as well. So will them to the finish line. Looking forward to hearing how that unfolds. You can find me on Twitter as well, at Jack Pilgrim KSR. Reach out to me via email, jpilgrim@KentuckySportsRadio.com. With that, we'll be back next time for another jam-packed Sources Say podcast. We will see you then.